share conversation, communication. I'm hearing me and you're hearing you.
You may have heard his songs all over the world, but it all started from video games.
My parents got me my first guitar. I was playing a lot of Guitar Hero, and they were like, well, maybe we should turn this into something actually productive.
Yeah, I would say that live streaming to millions, that does sound productive, even when he downplays it.
Love yourself.
I was just a young, maybe cute kid that was singing some songs, and I wasn't that great back then, I guess, compared to now.
He was a member of the hit boy band Why Don't We, and now he's doing his own thing. He's a singer. He's a songwriter. He's Corbin Bessin now on The Pulse. Watch and listen.
Don't blink. You might miss it. Don't tell too much. Just listen.
Okay.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. We've got people who are doing cool things, but more importantly, they've got great stories. And our guest today, to be young, not even 30 years old, has been through kind of building a whole career and then some challenges and now rebuilding a whole career and billions of streams and millions of followers. It's a lot. So Corbin Bessin joins us to kind of tell the story. Thanks for taking some time with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. I'm stoked to be here.
I appreciate you. Man, I was reading your background. I was upstairs on your social media. Like, you got started early. You're still young and have kind of been through it, you know, in the music industry. So let's backpedal a little. How'd you get started?
Oh, man, I got started. I would say my intro to music was very early on when I was a kid, like probably kindergarten, first grade. My parents forced me to take piano lessons. So that was, I guess I got started early. But I would say it really started when I was probably between like 12 and 15 years old. When I was 12, I got my first guitar. My parents got me my first guitar. I was playing a lot of Guitar Hero, and they were like, well, maybe we should turn this into something actually productive. And then I just started, I started singing kind of around that age as well. And Justin Bieber was kind of starting to, you know, do his global domination thing. And Shawn Mendes was popping off, and Ed Sheeran, of course, was going crazy. So I was just singing like acoustic covers of their songs, and eventually started live streaming that. It's like 2015, maybe. I was like 16 years old, and eventually kind of just slowly gained a following, and then kind of got scouted by some friends slash some guys who knew a guy, basically, and got put in a boy band called Why Don't We. And then for the next 7 years of my life, from 17 to like 24, I was in that boy group. And wow.
then
did a couple world tours.
And, yeah. And you kind of blew up. So you knew very early on, because I'm always intrigued by the differences in people like you who go out there with that level of talent. I played Guitar Hero too, and my guitar is downstairs in the prop closet here at the station. Like, that's the use that came from
it. That's how it is sometimes, man.
Yeah, listen, I know my role, and I'm not trying to jump into others, but you knew pretty young, this is something I'm going to do.
Yeah, and you know what's funny is it was mostly just a hobby at first, for real. It was it wasn't something that I really started taking seriously until I started live streaming and kind of had this like spark moment of success. There was like, I think the moment that kind of started it all for me was there was one time I was live streaming and I was on for a couple hours. I had maybe 20 viewers, like nothing crazy. And this is like pre-Twitch, really any live streaming platform. There was this old app called YouNow, like way back in the day. It was one of the first of its kind. And I had like 20 viewers, and the person live streaming in front of me that had more viewers than me had like 4,000 or something. So I don't know how I was in second place with 20 viewers, but the way the app worked, whenever the person in front of you would get off, the viewers would all then go to the next stream.
Okay.
And so I kind of just happened to be in the right place at the right time, and I got kind of this wave of viewers, like, yeah, a few thousand of them that all came into my stream. And I think that day I gained like I stayed on for a few more hours after that and gained like 5 or 10,000 followers just in that one little session. And after that, I started having 50 viewers and 100 viewers and 250 viewers and then 300. And it kind of just went up from there. So when that happened, I kind of was like, oh, maybe people actually like this. Like, maybe I actually am like kind of decent. And so I started taking it seriously. And then, yeah, got kind of scouted from that, which was really fire.
That's legit. So you had your kind of big break, was just lucky, but you were ready for it. You know? People saw you. Yeah. You had something to show them.
Yeah.
All right. I like it. That works like that. So you get scouted, you know, then you kind of start taking off. You see more of the streams. It sounds almost like an overnight sensation. Was it to kind of get you into Why Don't We?
Oh, man. To get into Why Don't We, I think, was... excuse me. Mm-hmm. It was a few years long process. I mean, it was, don't get me wrong, it happened pretty quickly. It was kind of out of the blue. I was a junior in high school when I joined the group, and I had to take like my SAT early. I had to take all my final exams early and everything to be able to come out to Los Angeles and actually like do the kind of audition that we did for who would then become our managers. And from once the group got started, it happened pretty quickly for us. I think within the first year, we went from like 100,000 followers on Instagram to like 1 million followers. It was that part was pretty quick. But I really do think this whole thing started when I was a kid, you know, I think luck is interesting because I think it's the combination of like opportunity and preparedness, right? You know, and I happened to be in the right place at the right time, and I was singing some songs that people liked, and that turned into what has now like become my entire life, which I'm super grateful and super blessed to be doing, because I would not rather be doing anything else. I'm sitting in my studio at my house right now. I got my mic next to me. I got the speakers and everything. So
it's not a bad life.
Yeah, I try to count my blessings every day.
Well, and luck, when I said luck, the lucky, perhaps the opportunity. Luck doesn't give you talent, just kind of people fair. Seeing or having that opportunity. Because a whole bunch of us could have been next in line. You know, and if it was time to sing, they'd have been, all right, like, can we get to the next person?
It's funny though, man. I look back and, you know, maybe this is true about everybody who looks back at stuff they were doing when they were younger, but I look back at some of that stuff and sometimes I'm like, how did I even, because I was just a young, maybe cute kid that was singing some songs, and I wasn't that great back then, I guess, compared to now. But it's funny to look back on, because so much time has passed, man. It flies.
Yeah. So 17-ish when you're kind of in the band, all of a sudden you're talking about taking SATs early. You're talking about doing all of that high school stuff. And then overnight, really, you know, millions of people are aware of you. You guys did like billions of streams. The numbers are staggering. What was that like? Because then you're not playing anymore. You're not streaming anymore. You know, now this is real.
Yeah, it became very real. But it was really fun, man. It was just a lot of like, you know, checking off bucket list moments and kind of watching your dreams unfold right in front of you. And a lot of it was pretty unbelievable. I will say it's a ton of work, man. We were thrust into just a very serious business very quickly at a young age. And, you know, I think you kind of get a taste of reality pretty quickly. And, you know, you also get showed like what it takes to like be great. And, it takes a lot of effort, and it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of thought. And I also think, too, you learn a lot about the world and about people and about culture and about music. And, you know, we were traveling the world playing 200 to 250 shows a year and in all corners of the world. And just the people you meet and the stories you hear and the smiles you get to put on people's faces, man, it's a very unique thing, and it's a very special thing. And so I'm super grateful that I've had the opportunity to like be that in my life, you know, because I dreamed it as a kid. Yeah, definitely instilled some work ethic. There's so much that goes on behind the scenes in the music industry, man. It's the illusion is funny. It's there's a whole front, which is, you know, how it should be. You got to make it feel magical. We had a lot of fun, man. I mean, it's just some of my best memories that, you know, I'll tell my grandkids one day.
So we've had the pleasure, honestly. It's interesting because we've had the pleasure on this show to interview a couple of the members of New Edition. We had the pleasure on this show to interview Joey McIntyre and New Kids on the Block. And when they tell, everybody kind of had similar stories because they all talked about how much fun it was. They all talked about the enjoyment. But looking back at it, you're like, I was 15, 16, yeah, 17 years old and had, you know, grown women waiting in the lobby of my hotel or all the
yeah,
different
it's funny, man.
Requirements. Like that kind of stuff, I don't think people get a firm grasp of.
Yeah, it's funny, you know. It'd be the moms would bring their daughters to the show, or the dads would bring their daughters to the show. Sometimes we'd have some guys come through the line, and we'd be like, "Oh, we're the coolest dudes ever! We got guys coming to our show." And sometimes the moms were more excited than the daughters, which was always really funny to us. You know, they're, you know, reliving the Backstreet days or reliving the NSYNC days, and. But we got shown so much love, man. It was truly a blessing.
Yeah. I don't want to probe too much, but in looking into your background, you talk about how you're really excited about what you're doing now as a solo mm-hmm. artist, kind of going out there. To get there, you had to get through some challenges. And yeah. that's another thing that a lot of those groups, I feel like every one of those groups we've talked to has the, yo, I thought it was going like this. And then, yeah. like, New Edition went on a world tour, and then their tour bus dropped them back off in the projects after they got finished
like,
the tour.
That's crazy, man.
So there was always this kind of manager, legal, money haggling kind of thing. And yeah. and you guys had your own that kind of got yeah. you to this point. What was that like?
Man, it's so funny. It's like the boy band curse. It's like... But what I really think it is and that sounds super negative, but what I really think it is the music industry is just a very cutthroat industry, and there's a lot of things that are pretty, I guess I would say, like, not unregulated, but you know, there's a lot of rules that can be broken, and because they're not really rules. And and so I think, you know, for us, it was kind of a situation of, to keep a very long story short, it was kind of a situation of, you know, just being young and signing a contract that you don't have any leverage against, and, you know, being given an opportunity to, like, make your dreams come true.
Yeah.
Under the guise of, you know, one day, you know, when this all works out, you know, you'll own everything, and, you know, you guys will be taking over the world, and, you know, a little bit of the dangle the carrot kind of thing. And, so I think the beginning of the end started when kind of in the middle of the pandemic, which was this pretty unfortunate 1-2 punch, where we kind of started, you know, fighting for our creative freedom a little bit more. We had grown up, we wanted to transition as a group, and, we also wanted, you know, just ownership of our music and ownership of our trademark, and to be able to express our creativity and have people, you know, buy into it. And it didn't go over so well. And there was, you know, it essentially became a divorce between the business partners that owned the group, and it became kind of a custody battle over the group, and we had to pick a side. And we picked the side of the guy who was vouching for us and not vouching for the company that owned us. Yeah. And it just, you know, became litigation, lawyers, court pretty quickly. And I kind of get it, because when you're dealing with, you know, for lack of a better term, a product that, you know, generates a lot of revenue and whatever, I think it can turn into that pretty quickly. Also, when you're dealing with people with really big egos that have all the money in the world to make
and
sure that
billions
they
of streams at stake.
Yeah,
then that kind of explains that background. So Why Don't We kind of goes away, but it also created a tremendous opportunity for Corbin Besson. For you. So you, in reading kind of some of your background, it was something, the solo work that you're doing now was something you had been thinking about anyway. And this kind of pushes you in that direction.
Yeah, and it was a silver lining, man. I try to be optimistic with any situation that comes my way, regardless of how, I guess, seemingly negative. And I think for me, it's funny even to kind of make a joke out of it. When I got the opportunity to join the band, I wasn't sure if I even wanted to do it. I was like, I want to be a solo artist, you know, I want to do my own thing, I don't want to share the stage. And my parents were like, don't mess this up. They were like, join this group, you idiot. And I was like, all right. And thank God they did, because everything that I've been through in my career and in my late teens and early and mid 20s has led me here. And I think there's something to be said about, you know, it's maybe cliche, but everything happens for a reason. And getting to do my own thing now is something that I've always looked forward to, even when in the group. And I think pretty immediately following the group officially going on hiatus, I kind of had an identity crisis, because I was like, you know, who am I outside of this bigger thing? You know, can I live up to the expectation that either people have of me or that I have of myself? And went through kind of a year and a half's worth of just like wondering who I even thought I was. And the biggest shift for me happened when I started writing my EP that came out earlier this year. Mm-hmm. And I started writing music that didn't feel like I was going into it with the intention of, oh, is this what people want to hear from me? It was just the intention of, is this something that I like? You know, is this something that I wanted to make for myself? And low key, it changed my entire perspective on music and my perspective on myself. And it made me fall in love with music in a whole different way than I had in the group, because it was just coming from me now, and I had my hand in it, and people trusted my opinion. And I just really felt like for the first time in my music career, I could really embody fully the music and the art that I was putting out into the world, which was a super refreshing feeling. And it was a big transition for me just as a person and as an artist.
I'm
very, very glad to be doing it today still.
It had to be. And you're on tour now, obviously, coming to Philadelphia August 29th, you'll be at TLA, but you're going all over the place on this tour. You know, it's only been out since the beginning of the year in January, the EP, but millions of streams are back, you know, has kind of gone forward. So is this fun again? Is this as much fun as you were having before? Is it more? What's touring like?
Yeah, man, it's great. It's different to be on stage kind of, you know, holding the spotlight the whole time. But it's really fun, man. I feel like I get to do things my way, and I'm in control of my own destiny. And that feels just really freeing and really nice. And I love the music that I've made. I'm biased because it's my own stuff. But I feel like I listen to my own stuff more than I listen to a lot of other people's stuff these days. And I think that that's a testament to the songs themselves, and put a lot of effort into them, put a lot of effort into the show. I've been dancing a bunch, which is really tight. We kind of danced in the group, but not really, nothing impressive, I will say. And so, you know, to be dancing now, that's another thing that I always wanted to do, but never really had the means to in the group. So to be doing that now and just actually fully embodying the music itself is really tight. And just to feel the love again, man. I've been cooped up in my house before this for way too long. So it's nice to just like see the people and give hugs and see some smiles and just hear the stories again, you know.
Well, and you're getting a chance to work with some cool people. And the music, like you're talking about, you listen to your own music. I obviously had it on getting ready for the interview, and came down here and had to stop myself from some Blink was stuck in my head.
Yeah, nice.
And I'm sitting here like, I don't know that it's appropriate for me to come on the interview going word for word
it's
with
a sticky
songs.
One. That one's sticky.
But it seems like working with them is fun, right? And it's getting received well because a lot of people are saying that about the music.
Yeah. It's been pretty crazy seeing the response. My EP was the first project I've put out that was like an actual project since going solo, and it was a little scary at first because I was like, "Wow, this is like my declaration of me to the world." And it's been received so well, man, and so many of my friends and people online and just people I've met along the way have different favorite songs from the project, which is really cool. So I think, you know, there's really something for everybody on it, and the songs are really good. So if you're watching this and you haven't heard the EP yet, it's called Head First, and it's pretty decent if you ask me.
And if they can follow you because of your kind of background streaming and touring and all of that on your Instagram, on social media, they can get a little taste of you getting ready for the tour, little clips of the music, a bunch of that.
Yeah,
so people can catch
there.
Up pretty quickly.
Yeah. It's all on there.
I like it. Give him a follow. He's only got, you know, a couple million people. He could take a couple more to go ahead and jump in. So quickly, tell us what we're going to experience when we come to this show. You're touring with some friends, at least it looks like on Instagram. I'm not going to act like an expert. Seems like you guys are cool like that. So this seems like just kind of a fun tour.
Yeah, man, it's going to be really fun. I think it's going to be the whole idea is that it's high energy, and I just want it to feel like a party, you know. I want it to feel like whatever you got going on in your life, you can put it on pause for a couple hours and come have a great time with me and some of my friends, bring you and some of your friends, and I want it to be an environment where everyone feels safe and welcome, and they can come and just come see a show that they won't forget, have a great time, dance around a little bit, sing some songs. And I really just want it to be fun energy, man. There's too much going on in the world. Let's you know, take a couple hours to just enjoy ourselves. So that's my whole goal. And it's been fun putting on the show, man.
At, what are you, 27 now? The ripe old age of 27.
Yeah, man, I'm getting there.
Kind of all involved in so many different aspects of the music industry in a very short period of time, and to continue to go through that, what's the lesson learned? What do you wish you knew and now you can pass on to other people who are trying to do this?
Oh man, there's so many of them. I think the biggest lesson that I've learned, truthfully, is just be kind to people, man. I think being kind to people has gotten me so much further in life and has gotten me so much closer to my goals than anything else has. And I'll also say, to add on to that, being kind to people has made my life better and happier. And I think there's a lot of kind people in the world, and there's a lot of not kind people in the world. And I think if there was anything that I could, you know, preach to anybody, it's just be kind. It makes other people's lives better, and it actually adds a little bit more color to your own. So, that's, I think, the biggest lesson that I've learned.
I got two more quickly before I let you go. With all of this, is there a bucket list? I mean, you're on tour, and you're going to be doing that for a minute. But is there a what next that we should be looking for?
Oh man, bucket list for me is sold out Madison Square Garden. Okay. I think that's, you know, maybe a little cliche as well, but that's one of those milestones that as an artist you always look up to that, and you want to get to that point. So I think you know, if in 18 to 24 months I was playing there, I would say I'd pat myself on the back. But that, and just, I think, keep living life the way that I've always wanted to live it. And I think just keep shining a light on the world. And that's all. Those are all my little checklist moments. And also just try to be a better person every day.
I think that that's
my checklist.
That segues into, and I think you've already kind of touched on it, but the whole theme of this show is how you use your voice for good. So I ask everybody, that's everyone's last question, is when you hear use your voice for good, what does that phrase mean to you?
Man, I think not to go back on anything I just said, but like just being kind and encouraging people and I think just giving people love when they need it. I think you get what you give as well. So if you feel like you're needing a little bit of love today or in this part of your life, I think give a little bit and I'm sure you'll get some back. Just be kind, man.
Corbin Beston, this has been fun, man. I appreciate it. Congrats on all the success, ongoing success. It'll be at TLA August 29th. You can get tickets and several other places. If you're not in Philadelphia, he's going all over the place, so make sure you check him out. And we wish you continued success. I'm going to go back upstairs to my office and listen to Blink some more.
Yeah, let's go, man. Thank you very much. Thank you all for having me, and I hope to see y'all at the show.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast today with Corbin Beston. And I got to tell you, I was familiar with some of his music. I was not as familiar with the story. And to sit back and have somebody who kind of got into the industry very young, 12, 14, 15 years old, ended up with millions of followers, billions of streams as part of a boy band at 17, and then got sued to lose the rights to his own name before he came back, went solo, and built it all back. It's a fascinating story to all happen before he turned 27 years old. So very cool to talk to him, hear the story. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Go ahead and hit like, follow, subscribe, whatever's on the screen right there that lets you know every week when another episode of The Pulse comes out. You can download the Fox Local app because all of our episodes are right there at your fingertips. And hit me up on social media at BillAFox29. I always love hearing from you. Thank you so much for listening. And I leave you as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.